Hello, all you good-looking people out there in Revolution Radio. This is Mario. I invite you to join me Thursdays at 6 o'clock for This, That, and the Other. It's a show about you, it's a show about me, but ultimately it's a show where we try to have a little bit of fun. We discuss important topics, and we do our best to be apolitical. So I invite you, put on your favorite pair of comfy sweats, your smoking jacket, and grab a beverage of your choice, and join me Thursday evenings at 6 o'clock for This, That, and the Other on Revolution Radio.
She travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Alô, 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 привет, добрый день, фалаха, хуйановант, алоха, оля, джамбо, салам алейкум, акматсила, сукерес, бонжорно, алло, чефач, здрасти, добро утро, добр вечер, добрый день, йо, good morning, good afternoon, good night, good day, good evening, good after, I already said that, good whatever, I am your host, the Right Reverend Dr. Rowe. And you're listening to Real Out Extraction on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. see who we got in our chat rooms. Shall we? Let's see. We have Manifester Susie Q 909. We've got Shermanator. Dawn's to you too. Lady Horse. Poof. Cat Dog Girl. Dirt Engineer and Dirt. WH Devo. Pat Rabbit. Myself, Mona Rattler, Monster 383, AMAD, Narara, Batsman, Comet, Popsicle Toes, Jer Bear, Suri Sunflower, Wally, Blessing, Nesomania, Valerie, Gino 2017, Melia, Main Street 139, not much doing it in the kitchen. Fleece and Captain Fred were around here somewhere. We also have a decentralized chat room as well, the Matrix chat room. Check that out. And we're 100% listener supported. Here we are. This is Studio B. La, 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 la. Yeah. So, okay, it's hot out here. It's like 94 degrees here in sunny California. There's a fire like a mile away from me. And I discovered that. I was looking on the Telegram and I was like, oh, what's the news? And it's a local, it's not just local. This is news from all over the place. Police news and stuff. And they're like, they're working on a fire. 75 acres it burned. And I'm like, boy, that looks like a familiar area. Oh, crap. Zombieites. What are we going to talk about tonight? This is the ninth day of June 2022, 1700 hours and some change, 5:08 p.m. California time, where I guess we're supposed to be having a heat wave. A heat wave. Yeah, whatever. So where should we start? I've got a couple pieces of miscellaneous news. Let's get the miscellaneous news out of the way and then a little bit of a rant. And then on the second hour, we're going to talk about looking at auras and looking into the astral realm. I have my glasses right here, actually. I haven't been using them as much as I should, but when I look at plants, I'm putting them on right now. Oh, my goodness. And there's a wavelength of light that it allows through, and it's not exactly the most we'll go into that later, but actually it does, there's something, I don't know how to explain it, maybe after the Red Bull and the Kratom kick in I'll be a little bit better. But so how is everybody? I hope you're all having a wonderful freaking week. Bats bleep glabber bleep slabber. Tuning the frequencies. Shermanator and Blasphemous Buddha. I see. Yes. Oh, wait. I already said Shermanator. But Blasphemous Buddha, welcome to the chat room. Also, I got your private message that you sent me, the person that sent me that private message. However, I only got, like, I didn't get the PDF. Apparently, you're trying to send me a PDF. It didn't go through. You can email it to me. Unless you can Skype it to me, or you can email it at mrrowe@freedomslips.com as well. So if you need to email, I'll check the email. How am I doing? Okay, I feel a bit of goofy. I feel a little bit off today. I'm not sure why. Maybe I need to get out and get some sun. I don't know. Maybe it's the aura glasses. Maybe it's the
dicyanin and dye. That's not supposed to be harmful. No, I don't have any. I don't have any. Officially, I don't have any. Don't come kicking my door in looking for dicyanin and dye. Oh, but first, you know what they found? They found, apparently, they found these carvings, 2,000, they say they're 2,000 years old. 2,000-year-old paintings representing the largest Native American cave drawings discovered to date. But apparently, their meaning is eluding researchers, quote unquote. They're giants. They found what they say are 2,000-year-old paintings in Alabama. Which I've actually thought about moving to Alabama. I'm like, it's cheap. And there's some nice areas in Alabama. But I hear they got large mosquitoes. Well, anyway, the images were spotted by a researcher from the University of Tennessee and colleagues in Atlanta in a cave in northern Alabama known as the 19th Unnamed Cave, one of many whose exact whereabouts on private property have been obscured to hide it from vandals and looters. Okay, I can't blame them. Mysterious images of birds, snakes, bison, human figures, large human figures, and weapons were published in an article in the peer-reviewed journal Antiquity last week. And in fact, I have a link to that. I should put that in the chat room, shouldn't I? Okay. Oh, let's see. I got another message. Okay, no problem. Yes, I totally understand. All is good. All right, here's a link to this Cambridge. It's a PDF. I'm clicking on it myself right now. Discovering ancient cave art using 3D photogrammetry, pre-contact Native American mud glyphs from 19 unnamed cave, Alabama. And they have a bunch of photos in there. If you scroll through it, several pages. The document's quite interesting for the archaeologist, anthropologist in you. Might want to take a look at that. But some people are saying that's showing that they're giants. Limestone Cave, home to more than 5 kilometers of passageways, the main one of which opens up into a chamber onto the ceilings in which mud glyphs are inscribed. Up close, the glyphs appear to contain lines that look like human fingertips, an indication they were likely painted by hand or with a tool composed of several parallel elements. The researchers use radiocarbon dating to trace the paintings to AD 133 to 433. I mean, I don't know how much we can trust when they say in mainstream, like, all their numbers are skewed. But let's just go. We'll roll with it. How about that? Let's see. Pre-Columbian era. It's traced to a period known as the Woodland Period, a pre-Columbian era in North America. In which sedentary residential patterns began replacing foraging as the main way of life. So they used 3D photogrammetry, a process of overlapping images to create a realistic 3D model to record the paintings. So that's interesting. That was just a recent discovery. Here's another piece of miscellaneous news that has nothing to do with anything. Ousted Ukrainian official breaks silence, admitting that she lied about mass rape by Russian soldiers to garner more aid and arms, and apparently it worked. The top Ukrainian official who was fired for spreading misinformation has admitted that she lied about Russians committing mass rape in order to convince Western countries to send more weapons to Ukraine. Because, you know, you see top officials of countries just lie, not only to you and me, but to each other. You think she's alone? She just got caught. There's a song. Something about just don't get caught. Do whatever you need to do. Just don't get caught, man. Whatever. So, Ludmila Denisova, the former Ukrainian paramilitary commissioner for human rights, was removed from her position following a vote of no confidence in the Ukrainian parliament, which passed by a margin of 234 to 9. Member Pavlo Frolov specifically accused Denisov of pushing misinformation that only harmed Ukraine in relationship to the numerous details of unnatural sexual offenses and child sexual abuses in the occupied territories, which were unsupported by any evidence. So, yeah. And she went on, and there's actually a video. I'm not going to play it or anything. Russian crimes against civilians, the aggressor's attitude towards Ukrainian prisoners of war, Kiev, 14th of April, 2022. It's actually still on her page on YouTube. You can still watch it. So, like, people are still looking at these kinds of things, the lies. They just, they let them sit there. You would think that at least YouTube would actually, after this is being admitted to be misinformation, and so, and they're so diligently trying to protect our, you know, vulnerable minds against this horrible misinformation, that they might have something. No, they just allow this stuff to stay up. Yeah. Anyway, spent enough time on that. Let's see what else we got going on. Intelligence updates. Let's see what they're saying. Russian ambassador to Washington, Tony Antonov, received a letter inviting him, received a letter saying he should condemn his president for launching the special operation into Ukraine. But he said, if I wanted to condemn my president, I was told to contact the office of Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman. I affirm my rejection of such policies and such treatment of Russian diplomats. Ambassador Antonov also said the United States is breaching its international obligations and its own policies by failing to get Russia's permission before diverting four Mi-17 helicopters from the original destination of Afghanistan to Ukraine. And is breaching by the United States of its international obligations regarding the policies and transfer of weapons of war, now joined by Russian delegation Konstantin Gavrilov at the Military Security and Arms Control Talks in Vienna, Austria, saying, discovering some information about Western weapons coming from the West flooding into Ukraine, quote, there is a danger of the spread of light small arms from the conflict zone, namely javelins, man pads, anti-tank weapons, that the spread could move around the world, that it's not just related, they're not going to stay in Ukraine. The translation is weird. But that, okay, they are... Okay, there's evidence that these weapons are being sold in the black market. Yeah, actually, that's true. I have some information. I was just looking at some information and sent to the Middle East. We have already seen the footage. Okay, speaking of that, there was some, I think it was Barrett, 50 caliber Barrett U.S., and man pads. And anti-tank weapons. The Barrett was, I think, $3,000 in Monero, XMR, which is a privacy crypto. And this was being advertised on the dark web. Now you could go on the dark web, and there is, I think it's ThiefNet. Yeah, so if you go on the ThiefNet on the dark web, and you want to get yourself a Barrett, they'll ship it, apparently, according to the ad, they'll ship it FedEx. it's there. And a lot of these weapons, you know, when you think about it, I was watching this video of these Ukrainian soldiers on a Vespa-type scooter, and he's got a little tow with this little tiny machine gun that was literally obsolete in World War II. And I'm thinking they just sent billions, like $40 billion there, and they're sending all kinds of weapons. And granted, some of the weapons might get blown up, but I don't think the rest of them, they're not even making it to the soldiers. They're being intercepted probably by maybe Bratzikrug or one of the operating gangs, clans, crime units. That's right. Let's send a bunch of cash and weapons into Eastern Europe. Oh my goodness! I can't believe they fell for that one. Jeez. Oh my goodness. So yeah, that was real smart. All right, let's see what else we got here. Russian lawmakers are submitting some draft legislation to the State Duma for new law targeting LGBT propaganda. That would provide for fines of up to $160,000 for promoting non-traditional sexual relations. The United States is in the process of taking two private planes of value over $400 million from Roman Abramovich, which is a Russian businessman. And they say that there's no reason. He didn't break any law. It's just he's got a couple private jets and he's Russian. Oh, let's take him. Congress in the United States is trying to ban the purchase of Russian uranium for the power plant network, but there's no other alternative. So they're like, we're not going to buy our uranium off from you. Where are you going to get it then? I don't know, but not from you. Okay. Let's see. There was a blast yesterday in Texas Coast facility production was wiped out. So let's see, that's a bunch of blah blah blah. Guns. Okay. All right, so that was the latest intelligence update. Now, I guess we'll just roll with this. You know, everything is a lie, right? I mean, sometimes I open my shows with a song, you know, lie. Because everything is a lie. Everything we know has some sort of non-truth to it. Or it's some sort of psychological weapon or psychological warfare. Do you think that it's possible? They even said this. The CIA said this, that, well, you know, our work will be complete when everything the Americans believe is a lie. Have you ever wondered who's actually pulling the strings? You see, anything we touch could be a weapon. We can deceive, persuade, change, influence, inspire. We come in many forms. We are everywhere, quote unquote. That comes from the U.S. Army Psychological Operations recruitment video. The United States government is waging psychological warfare on you, the American people. And I don't think this is a conspiracy theory. Psychological warfare, what does that mean? Well, according to the RAND Corporation, it involves the planned use of propaganda and other psychological operations to influence the opinions, the emotions, the attitudes, and the behavior of opposition groups. And for years now, the government has been bombarding the citizens with propaganda campaigns, psychological operations aimed at keeping us compliant, easily controlled, right? And, of course, supportive of the authorities, the police, state, various efforts abroad and domestically. The government is so confident in its Orwellian powers of manipulation that it's taken to bragging about them. I mean, the United States Army's 4th Psychological Operations Group, the branch of the military responsible for psychological warfare, released a recruiting video that touts its efforts to pull the strings, quote unquote, turn everything they touch into a weapon, be everywhere, deceive, persuade, change, influence, and inspire. This, my friends, is the danger that is lurking in plain sight. One of the weapons in the government's vast arsenal. Psychological warfare may be one of the most devastating in terms of the long-term consequences. There's a military journal, Task and Purpose, and they explain it like psychological warfare is all about influencing governments, people of power, and everyday citizens. PSYOP soldiers' key missions are to influence emotions, notices, reasoning, behavior of foreign governments and citizens, deliberately deceive enemy forces, advise governments, persuade, provide communications for disaster relief and rescue efforts. And don't be fooled into thinking these psychological operation campaigns are only aimed at foreign enemies. The government has made clear in word and deed that we, the people, are domestic enemies to be targeted, tracked, manipulated, micromanaged, surveilled, and viewed as suspects and treated as if our fundamental rights are mere privileges that can be easily discarded. Aided and abetted by technological advances and scientific experimentation, the government has been subjugating the American people to apple pie propaganda for the better part of the last century. Consider some of the ways in which the government continues to wage psychological warfare on a largely unsuspecting citizenry, weaponizing violence with alarming regularity. The nation continues to be subjected to spats of violence that terrorize the public, destabilize the country's ecosystem, and gives the government greater justifications to crack down, lock down, and institute even more authoritarian policies for the so-called sake of national security. And they do it without you objecting. Weaponizing surveillance, pre-crime, pre-thought campaigns, surveillance, digital stalking, and the data mining of the American people add up to a society in which there's little room for indiscretions, imperfections, or acts of independence. You know, recently, there has been, like, I think it's a 5,000 or 500% gain increase in gun stores that have been shut down because of typos, because the Biden administration has taken on a new zero policy for clerical error. If you don't dot an I across a T, and you run a gun store, and they look through, and let's say you sold a gun to somebody 10 years ago, and they filled out a form, and they misspelled something or changed a date and didn't initial it. Normally, those things would be either overlooked or at most kicked back with a little bit of a warning or an advisement to say, hey, you know, be accurate, please. Now they just shut you down. So when the government sees all, knows all, and has an abundance of laws to render even the most seemingly upstanding citizen or business a criminal or a lawbreaker, and then the old adage that you've got nothing to worry about if you've got nothing to hide, that no longer even applies. Let's add pre-crime programs into the mix with government agencies of corruption working in tandem to determine who is a potential danger. Spin a sticky spider web of threat assessments, behavioral sensing warnings, flagged words, suspicious activity reports, red flag laws. They're going to use automated eyes and ears, social media, behavior sensing software, and citizen spies. And you have the makings for a perfect dystopian and nightmare. The government's war on crime is now veering into the realm of social media and technological entrapment, with government agents adopting fake social media identities and AI-created profile pictures in order to surveil, target, and capture potential suspects. Because that's what you are. You are a suspect. Weaponizing. And now, where else shall we go? Oh, I know. How about weaponizing digital currencies, social media scores, and censorship? These tech giants working with the government have been meting out their own version of social justice by way of digital tyranny and corporate censorship, muzzling whoever they want, whenever they want, on whatever pretext they want, in the absence of any real due process, review, or appeal. You ever notice when you get like a warning or your post or blah, blah, blah from Twitter or Facebook or whatever, it's never signed by an individual, or you don't even get like, you're lucky if you get some sort of case number or something. It's always the Twitter team or the security team. So there's no one that's accountable. No one that's accountable. And I think, unfortunately, digital censorship is just the beginning. Digital currencies, which can be used as a tool for government surveillance of citizens and control over the financial transactions, combined with social media scores, surveillance capitalism, create a litmus test to determine who is worthy enough to be part of society and punish individuals for moral lapses. Moral lapses! For being, you know, an asshole. Because nobody should be an asshole, and if you are, you need to have your life completely ruined. Or maybe social transgressions. And also, you'll get rewarded for adhering to the rules. In China, millions of individuals, businesses are blacklisted as unworthy based on social media credit score. And they grade them based on, whether they've been good citizens or whether they've been banned from, you know, in the past, from accessing whatever. And then you don't get to go into financial markets, for example, buy real estate or travel by air, by train, by bus. Speaking of weaponizing, what else are they weaponizing? Weaponizing compliance, because that's what they want. They want you to comply. Yeah. Now, let's say even the most well-intended government law is well-intended, can be and has been perverted, corrupted, and used to advance illegitimate purposes. Once profit and power, like a for-profit prisons, they have a slave class. But once profit and power are added to the equation, that's what you get. The war on terror, the war on drugs, the war on COVID-19, the war on illegal immigration, asset forfeiture schemes, road safety schemes, school safety schemes, eminent domain. All of these programs started out as legitimate responses to pressing concerns and have since become weapons of compliance and control in the police state's hands. Just like everything. Everything. But not everything is bad. I mean, we've got some good stuff. We got movies. Weaponizing entertainment for the past century. The Department of Defense's Entertainment Media Office has provided Hollywood, hooray for Hollywood, with equipment, personnel, and technical expertise at your expense. That's right. In exchange, the military-industrial complex has gotten starring roles in blockbusters like Top Gun. Yeah, and its rebooted sequel, Top Gun Maverick. I haven't seen that yet. So Tom Cruise has been, you know, recycled again. Oh, but it's Tom Cruise. Uh-oh, some elite person that lies for a living. All right, whatever. And what's this translate to? Free advertising, right, for the military. Recruitment of foot soldiers for the military empire, patriotic fervor by the taxpayers who have to foot the bill for the wars. Because we're all going to go to war, and Hollywood visionaries working to churn out dystopian thrillers that make the war machine appear relevant, heroic, and necessary. There was a broadcaster from CBS. He was Elmer Davis, appointed the head of the Office of War Information. He said the easiest way to inject a propaganda idea into most people's minds is to let it go through the medium of the entertainment picture. When they do not realize that they're being propagandized, you go to the movies to enjoy yourself, to relax, let your guard down, to just let the screen tell you a story. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So weaponizing. What else has been weaponized? Behavioral science, apart from the overt dangers posed by a government that feels justified and empowered to spy on its people and use its ever-expanding arsenal of weapons and technology to measure and control you. there's also the covert issues, the covert dangers associated with a government empowered to use these same technologies to influence behaviors en masse and control the populace. In fact, it was President Obama who issued the executive order directing federal agencies to use behavioral science methods to minimize bureaucracy and influence the way people respond to government programs. It's a very, very, very short hop, skip, and a jump from behavioral program that tries to influence how people respond to paperwork to a government program that tries to shape the public's views about other more consequential matters. Thus, increasingly, governments around the world, including the United States, are relying on what they would call nudge units to steer citizens like cattle, moo, moo, in the direction the powers that be want you to go, while preserving, of course, the appearance that you have free will. And a lot of people, they don't look into this kind of stuff. They don't exercise their mind. Sometimes, if you talk too fast, you lose people. Weaponizing desensitization campaigns are aimed at lulling us into a false sense of security, and that's where they want you. The events that have been happening recently in the last several years, the invasive surveillance, the extremism reports, the civil unrest, the protests, the shootings, the bombings, the military exercises, the active shooter drills, the lockdowns, the color-coded alerts and threat assessments. I can make a song about it. Fusion centers, the transformation of local police into extensions of the military, the distribution of military equipment and weapons to local police forces, the government databases containing the names of dissidents and potential troublemakers, suspects. Would you call that conspiracy? Have conspired to acclimate the populace to accept a police state willingly and gratefully. Willingly and gratefully. You will thank us. What else has been weaponized? Your emotions, like fear, paranoia. The language of fear is spoken effectively by politicians on both sides of the aisle, shouted by media pundits from their cable TV pulpits, marketed by corporations and codified into bureaucratic laws that do little more than to make your life, oh, a little safer, right? A little more secure. Fear, by the way, it shows in history. It's a method that is most often used by politicians to increase the power of government and control the populace. They make you afraid, dividing the people into factions and persuading them to see each other as the enemy. This is a Machiavellian scheme. And there's not a lot of people that realize they're being manipulated into adapting an us-against-them mindset. Instead, you're fueled with fear and loathing for phantom opposition. And then you agree to send your money to the politicians. Maybe putting them into resources so they could, like, militarized police, spy technology, more war, you know, to make sure that democracy is safe. And then you hope that you're going to get a guarantee, some sort of safety that never really comes. All the while, the people in power, bought and paid by the lobbyists and corporations, move their little agendas forward, and you, the sucker, get saddled with a bill that you pay in your taxes or whatever way. And then you get subjected to things like pat-downs and police raids and more surveillance around the clock. And not only do they weaponize fear and emotions, but they are now going right down to the molecular level, weaponizing genetics. Yeah, genetics. Not only does fear grease the wheels of the transition to fascism by cultivating fearful, controlled, pacified citizens, but it also embeds itself in your very DNA so that you pass on your fear and compliance to your offspring. It's called epigenetic inheritance, the transmission through DNA of traumatic experiences. In fact, there is a case, you can look this up on the internet, and it's turned into a meme, actually, where a man who is born normal with, you know, all his fingers normally, gets his pinky chopped, half of his pinky chopped off when he was like in his, you know, teens or whatever. So he goes through most of his life with half a pinky, eventually gets married, has a baby, daughter. Turns out her pinky is only half a pinky, just that one pinky, the same pinky that he gotten chopped off. Because that was a traumatic experience. That was an epigenetic inheritance that the daughter received, a transmission through DNA of traumatic experiences. Now, example, neuroscientists have observed that fear itself can travel through generations of mice DNA. This was there was a report from the Washington Compost that studies on humans suggest that children and grandchildren may have felt the epigenetic impact of such traumatic events such as famine, the Holocaust, or September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. That was the quote. Now, that's also, I believe, why the Chinese people are so obedient. They've got those people standing in line. They're still standing in lines like cattle. Their lives have completely turned into just like testing everything every day. And a lot of them can't even go out. They're still jumping out of windows. Standing. It depends where you are in China. But they're exercising absolute hellish control. And the people, they've got it in their DNA to just take it. And so what else is being weaponized? How about the very future itself? With greater frequency, the government has been issuing warnings, right? Warnings about the dire need to prepare for the dystopian future that awaits us. There's a Pentagon training video, megacities, urban future, and the emerging complexity. Right? How about Klaus Schwab? We must prepare for a much angrier world, right? Much angrier world. We're all going to get mad. Yeah, we're going to get mad. You're pissing us off. Take the food away. Why don't you? The military, I think, would be called upon. They would use the armed forces to solve future domestic, political, and social issues. What is that? What is that called? That's called martial law, right? But they would package it up as like some sort of well-meaning, overriding concern for your security. But there is a 5-minute training video showing the future with criminal networks and substandard infrastructure, religious, ethnic tensions, impoverishment, slums, open landfills, overburdened sewers, just a hell world. But it's all artificial. An urban landscape in which the prosperous and economic elite must be protected from the impoverishment of the have-nots living in the wilds. Of course, we the people are the have-nots. We the people are those that they have to protect themselves against. So what is the end goal? The end goal of these mind control campaigns packaged in the guise of the greater good is to see how far the American people will allow the government to go in reshaping the country in the image of a totalitarian police state. I don't know. I think the facts speak for themselves. Whatever else it may be, a danger, a menace, a threat, the U.S. government is certainly not looking out for our best interests, for our best intentions. Nor is it any way a friend to freedom when the government views itself as superior to the citizenry, when it no longer operates for the benefit of the people, when the people are no longer able to peacefully reform their own government, when government officials cease to act like public servants, when elected officials no longer represent the will of the people, when the government routinely violates the rights of the people, perpetrates more violence against the citizenry than the criminal class, when the government spending is unaccountable and unaccounted for, when the judiciary acts as courts of order rather than courts of justice, and when the government is no longer bound by the laws of the Constitution, then you no longer have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. You have a government of wolves We the people who think, who reason, who take a stand, who resist, who demand to be treated with just a little dignity and care, who believe in freedom and justice for all, have become undervalued citizens of a totalitarian state that views people as expendable once they have outgrown their usefulness to the state. So all I can say to you is brace yourself. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that. So, let's see. 4 minutes to go. Let's look at the chat room and see what they're talking about. Do you agree? Do you disagree? How do we fix this? I think we do have to go back to local decentralization of government. What is that? It's like a confederacy, isn't it? The South shall rise again. You know, I've got a couple little things. Here's an interesting little story. This is a 12-minute long story. Should be just enough, and then we'll take a break. But this happened back in 1989. It has nothing to do with anything except people, it just so happened to be ex-Army Rangers, standing up for themselves. And I think that this following story that you're going to hear is an excellent example of why everybody needs to be armed. Everybody needs to be armed. Not just Army Rangers, not just gang members, not just police, but everybody, I tell you. So let me grab this and make sure that I've got it in the right place for you guys to hear it. And it goes for about 12 minutes. Here we go.
September 23rd, 1989. An Army Ranger who had just purchased a home on one of Tacoma, Washington's most gang-infested streets quickly became a witness to various illegal activity happening out front of his home. He wasn't shy of confronting it or notifying the authorities, and soon after, he became the target of one of the most notorious street gangs Washington State has ever seen. And after shaking up the hornet's nest one too many times, his home was ambushed by the Hilltop Crips gang, but not before he invited 15 of his Ranger buddies over for a barbecue. 300 rounds, and 10 minutes later, the Crips were fighting for their lives.
This is the Ash Street.
In 1989, the neighborhood of Ash Street in Tacoma, Washington, was an open-air drug market. There were several hot spots, and almost every house on the block was an active and thriving trap house. These gang infestations in the 1980s, born from the crack epidemic, flooded the streets and created an economic downturn that defined the decade. You might remember President Ronald Reagan declaring the war on drugs, or his first lady who was just like, just say no, oh my god. That was this time. Tacoma was Washington State's ground zero of gang activity, and by the summer of 1989, it had grown blatant, middle-of-the-day type shit. Like selling crack to the ice cream man type shit. And this was all fueled by an influx of gang members moving in from California. Tacoma police had experienced nothing like it before, and were really struggling to get it under control. Oftentimes not even knowing how to respond to it. Ash Street neighbors consistently called police and called 911 repeatedly and got nowhere. The typical response from police at the time was very mild. Community-oriented policing was a new thing, such as taking bullshit calls and pretending like it's not bullshit.
Yes, ma'am. I know you can't sleep when the dogs are barking.
But community policing was still viewed with suspicion by veteran cops who came up in the 60s and preferred the old ways, like smacking people in the head with their portable radios. At the time, Tacoma Police Chief Ray Faitland pushed these new community policing programs so far that the Hilltop Crip Gang rose to power.
When the OGs from Westbrook like HDC, when we mounted up the streets 200 deep, when the far flames had a shootout with cats from Ashton, when the Aztecs connected with them Hilltop niggas, had a shootout and chased out some cows.
Staff Sergeant William Folk of the 2nd Ranger Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, purchased his home on Ash Street in hopes that the neighborhood would soon turn around. To protect that investment, he was determined to help push the drugs and gangs out by any means necessary. Which may seem crazy to most people, but Staff Sergeant Folk was not most people. He was an elite operator who at a moment's notice could hit hard and smash fucking everything. You know, Ranger shit. But violence was the last thing the Staff Sergeant wanted, and he remained optimistic. In the summer of 1989, Folk returned from a December deployment in Panama to find the neighborhood worse than when he left. Along with other neighbors who were honest, hardworking people, he formed a neighborhood group that pressed police, demanding action. The neighbors started making signs, protesting, and taking pictures of the drug dealers. Even as the tension on Ash Street rose, Chief Faitlin made a decision he would later regret. Hamstrung by budget constraints and desperately short on the patrol side, he shifted 4 of 6 officers away from the Hilltop Crime Management Team to launch a community policing pilot project. The neighbors on Ash Street reacted with dismay. Under fire from citizens and the city council, a local Tribune covered the controversy, noting efforts by Ash Street neighbors to monitor the drug activity themselves. After the News Tribune piece, drug traffic on Ash Street slowed, but only so much. Staff Sergeant Folk was used to seeing more than 100 cars pass through his block on any given day, and after the story appeared, it was down to 20 cars. Folk decided to install a video camera in his upstairs window to record the traffic. He organized a neighborhood barbecue as a show of public unity, set for 3 p.m. Saturday, September 23rd. He invited neighbors, friends, ranger buddies, and thought nothing more of it. The day of the barbecue, a group of Hilltop Crip gangbangers acknowledged Folk outside of his residence and gave him the gun finger. It came from a car full of Crips. Driving by his house, the index finger pointed, thumb up, a little flip of the hand, and the mouthed words, boom, boom. The gangsters saw the video camera on Folk's house, and a few hours later they returned and threw rocks at it. Someone else took shots at the house and the video camera with a BB gun. Folk and a few ranger buddies then walked across the street to confront the out-of-shape, chain-smoking gangbangers who think they're hard. Folk told them to stop throwing things at his home and the neighbors' homes, to stop shooting BBs, and to instead turn their lives around and find better ways. The gangbangers warned him to take the camera out of his window. The gangbangers suggested the staff sergeant didn't know who he was dealing with. The staff sergeant suggested the gangbangers didn't know who they were dealing with. They then told him, "You're history, bitch," and told him they were going to burn his house down and light him up as soon as the sun goes down. Folk decided to walk away, and before he returned to his home, he overheard one of the Crips stating, "I'm gonna shoot that army son of a bitch." Folk then walked inside his house, he picked up his telephone, called some more of his ranger buddies from the 2nd Ranger Battalion, and invited them over for a barbecue, suggesting it wouldn't hurt if they came armed. Translation, bring your own bullets. "Hey guys, let's have a barbecue." "Okay, well yeah, what are we gonna smoke?" "Just some Crips." Including the few rangers who were already at the barbecue and the rangers called, the total of rangers grew to 15. Folk told them to bring personal weapons and whatever else they had. They came armed to the teeth with handguns, shotguns, and rifles. Folk was armed with a Browning 9mm and a Colt Python 357 Magnum. Fucking Magnum. Who's the gangster now, bitch? Over a couple beers, Folk pitched to his buddies a defensive operation of his home. Stake out locations and wait. No first moves. If police come, disarm immediately, cooperate, and assist. And all of his buddies joyfully agreed and were fucking down. They thought maybe nothing will happen, but if it does, zero tolerance for dudes shooting gats and smoking Swisher Sweets. As the sun went down, the rangers dispersed into their defensive positions, alert and observant of any and all activity inside and outside the perimeter of the house. A few hours had passed as the rangers held their positions. One ranger observed a vehicle approaching in the distance at a slow rate of speed, at which point the vehicle shut off its headlights. Folk, with his Magnum in hand, returned the favor and turned out the lights in his house and in the yard. At 9:20 p.m., as the vehicle approached, someone within the vehicle fired a shot into the air. The house was now taking fire from the rear, where, according to police reports, small caliber automatic gunfire was heard. The rangers opened a shit ton of fire, but so did the Hilltop Crips. One of the rangers, William Edwards, was posted on the front porch. When the shooting started, he hit the ground as a bullet slammed into the wall beside him. He and other rangers returned fire, seeing figures running amongst parked cars on the other side of the street. Ranger Russell Nolte, posted in the backyard, crawled forward as a shot hit the back of the house 3 feet over his head. Ranger Burr Settles was posted upstairs by the infamous controversial fucking video camera as a shot came through the window. The bullet grazed his head and he received multiple lacerations on his face from the shattered glass. Numerous muzzle flashes were now seen from the east. There were at least 16 shooters in 3 different locations. The Rangers again returned fire, while outside the assailants took cover amongst the parked cars, shooting over their shoulders, ducking down, shooting blindly. You know, stupid shit like that, like gangsters do. At this time, a neighbor taking cover on her kitchen floor dialed 911. And just like the famous Wild West shootout at the OK Corral, it was over in minutes. 10 minutes, to be exact. The first police car came down the middle of the street, cherries and berries on, with his siren blaring. The Rangers dropped their weapons, but as that first patrol car arrived on scene, one of the Hilltop Crip gang members popped a round off, sending the patrol car reversing out of the scene so quickly, smoke was seen coming from the rear tires. Officers in the car reported hearing 50 to 60 shots in less than 1 minute. Shortly after, more cops pulled into the block, and the gangbangers ran. The unarmed staff sergeant walked out the back door to his driveway and the alley behind his house. He felt someone behind and didn't fight. A hand shoved his head down and a voice ordered him to the ground. One gang member by the name of Frankie Strickland was cornered by a police canine and found to be in possession of 16 rounds of 9mm. He said he was holding them for a friend but couldn't remember the friend's name. You know, like a fucking liar. He also said the same thing about the pistol he was carrying. It was for a friend. Another suspect was carrying copper-headed rounds for a gas gun. Once the situation was under control and the officers learned about the Rangers' defensive operation, the responding sergeant of the Tacoma Police Department wasn't too happy about it. He lectured Folk and the other Rangers for not calling the police for assistance until shots were fired, and felt that the situation may have been avoided by calling 911 prior to the shooting getting started. Out of what was quite possibly a 35-man gunfight with over 300 rounds shot in the dark, no one was reported to be killed or injured. For 20 years, the official version of the shootout held that miraculously no one was hurt, but there are rumors injured gang members did not seek medical attention for obvious reasons, and some may have even been mortally wounded. And according to Folk himself, during the firefight, one gang member rushed towards Folk's house. I guess he thought he was going to John Wayne it, Folk remembered. One of the Rangers took aim and hit the gangster in the shoulder. The attacker staggered back and ran away. The moment goes unmentioned in police reports and witness accounts of the time. Unverified gossip holds that the wounded man was treated at a Seattle area hospital, over an hour away from Tacoma. Doug Sutherland, who was mayor at the time, pondered a declaration of a citywide version of martial law to combat the gang violence that immediately drew national attention. The city of Tacoma found the dollars to add more police officers to their department. Then Governor Booth Gardner even considered sending in the National Guard to Ash Street. The Hilltop Crip gang member who was arrested and found in possession of the 9mm and the pistol, Frankie Strickland, was the only man charged in connection with the shootout. He was convicted of second-degree assault and was later sentenced to 22 months in prison.
Bruh.
The military officially considered the incident a matter of self-defense for the off-duty Rangers. On February 9th, 2010, Tacoma Police and FBI launched a major crackdown on the Hilltop Crip Gang and charged 32 members with up to 50 crimes, everything from theft to attempted murder and drug sales. A few years back, a Tacoma police officer said something about the shootout. He said it was the single most important incident in Tacoma that caused a change in police policies and practices. Staff Sergeant William Folk never moved away from Ash Street, and as he predicted, he was never promoted and left the Army in 1993. He still owns the property to this day. Hey, guys.
All right. And that's why I believe that everybody should be armed for the entire neighborhood. I don't care what neighborhood it is. You know, you're going to have more law-abiding people than you are going to have gang members, hopefully. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
I demand an explanation.
We work for a highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
An intelligence organization that fears intelligence historically, not awesome.
The United States is a democratic nation. Here the people rule. We build no walls to keep them in, nor organize any system of police to keep them mute.
Freedom isn't free at all. But it comes with the highest of costs.
We have you, the listeners, and the hosts at
Revolution Radio.
For allowing us to bring you a platform of free speech.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for staying with us. We now return to the King of Crypto, the Tarzan of Techno, the mystery wrapped up in a riddle, Mr. Rowe.
me now. Afraid to lose control and caught up in this world. I've wasted time, I've wasted breath. I think I've thought myself to death. I was wrong about this fear. Now only this seems clear. I need to move, I need to fight. I need to lose myself tonight. Whoa! Before I'm told, but a part of me knows that I'm growing too old. Confused what I thought was something I felt. Confused what I feel was something that's real. I tried to sell my soul last night. Funny, you wouldn't even take a bite.
Radio, freedomslips.com. It is the ninth day of June, sixth month, 2022. And we're back for almost another hour. Now, almost forgot to report on this, but the Aidan Aslan, one of the British mercenaries, as well as the other British mercenary, I forget his name, and the Moroccan mercenary, have all gone through their trials in the DNR, or the Donetsk People's Republic, and they have been found guilty. Aidan Aslan did plead guilty, and they have been sentenced to death. They were sentenced in the autonomous sovereign region of the DNR, and they have a month to appeal their sentence. But they've been sentenced to death. Now, just because I have it here, I have the last interview, possibly the last interview from Aidan Aslan, just before the verdict came out. And this was from last night before he found out. So the verdict was issued. Again, he's been sentenced to death. And he has 30 days. Usually death is by firing squad over there. Let's listen to what he has to say. It's about 3 minutes long.
It's the third day of my court trial. Tomorrow the judges will be making the decision on what my punishment will be. Today we discussed about my interrogation and charges that were brought against me, and I pleaded guilty on all three charges. Tomorrow they're going to decide what my punishment will be. The prosecutors asked for the death sentence. However, our defenders and myself have asked for less severe consequences in this regard, especially with everything I offered and helped with the investigation. So there's a possibility that this might be my last video. However, on that note, I would like to let the people of Donbass know that I, like, obviously if you see my video, like from the court trial, that I fully like repented with the actions that I did in choosing to serve with the Ukrainian military. And I know it's hard to believe it because I'm a prisoner, like most people will say this stuff. However, having seen what happened in Mariupol, that was a big change in the way I thought about how this conflict actually is. I'm fully repentful and remorseful for the people of the conflict in Donbass, especially with me taking a part in the hostilities, like in the operation. I would like to say, though, like as I've said in the court today, I mentioned that if we're given a lesser severe sentence, like as Sean Pinner is on the same as well, I recommended that I would like to help. I can't take away the fact that I serve with the Ukrainian military. I will never be able to take that away. What's done is done. However, I believe that it's now my duty, like for the people of Donbass, to help rebuild the destroyed cities, especially like Mariupol. Like it's like Stalingrad. There's going to be a lot of help needed with that. So like I would like to offer my help if the opportunity is given, to basically rebuild the cities that will need rebuilding, because I've seen Mariupol. It's pretty apocalyptic there, and I presume a lot of other cities are in similar state after the operation will be finished. So yeah, I just wanted to let people know this could be my final video. I'm praying to God that the people of Donbass will forgive me for my actions and understand how I was easily misled with the options that I chose. Obviously, there's also the saying that live by the sword, die by the sword. This would be true. However, like I truly regret and remorse, and as people know, I chose to try and desert and took surrender at the first opportunity. So I hope people forgive me and can understand from where I come from with that, as I chose not to fight and would rather lay down my arms. So I thank everyone that's been helping or giving me support from the Russian side. I am truly grateful for the support you've given, especially considering I'm a captive of the enemy, aside from the Ukrainian side. Thank you for that. And as I said, truly sorry for everything that I took part in. I hope there will be a future video, but like I said, this could be my last video. So, thank you.
That's that. And yeah, so we'll see if he wins his appeal. I think there is an RT interview out there, but I think it was before, obviously. So I think that was the final video that he was able to make, and we'll find out in the future if after a month they go through the firing squad or if they do it in another way or whatever. Okay, moving along, I have one more thing to play for you, and then this kind of relates into what I'm going to be talking about with you for the remainder of the show. It kind of goes into it segues into that. Now this is a report from 2008, 2009, something like that. It's a little bit dated. Take it with a grain of salt, but it's interesting, and like I said, it segues into what I'm going to talk about in the final segment of the show, which has to do with dicyanin dye and goggles and special kind of dye that's very, very hard to come by and very obscure. There are mimics. There are things that are close, but the exact dye itself is not available. If you look for it, you can't really find it, at least here in the United States. So without further ado and me rambling, let's just move on to this little report. And here we go.
The date is June 29th, 2008, 6:32 p.m. I'm creating this message to let the people of the world, or whoever happens to hear this, know the truth about what is going on with regards to the alien presence in our world, as well as interstellar space and within our own solar system. I myself am a worker in one of the underground bases located near Groom Lake. I have done my work there for the past 8 years, and within the next coming months will be discharged. Now, what I'm going to tell you, you may want to take with a grain of salt, but I assure you, everything that I am about to say is truth, is fact. And whether you know it or believe it or not, everything that I will tell you is common knowledge within the Black Ops community at the most highest and secretive levels. Now, as I said, I've worked inside an underground base near Groom Lake for the past 8 years, and have done my work there as a researcher and analyst, working within the realm of the ET program, as we call it, or as it's known in the Black Ops community as G28. What we do here is research, analyze, and investigate the extraterrestrial presence within our solar system and other dimensions. And what I'm going to tell you today is the truth about what is going on. I will try not to be too vague in my revelations. However, I do not want to say too much, as I have already committed a felony in the eyes of our government just by speaking on the subject. And I will be leaving soon after my discharge. And I have asked the owner of this video, to which I'm sending, not to publicize this video for at least 2 years after its recording to ensure my safety as well as theirs. Now, as I've said, and let me make this clear, the presence of alien beings and the technology does exist. It is real as you or me, and it's a whole lot more out there than even the most diehard believers could possibly fathom. The truth is that we, and by we I mean this planet and the people of this planet, are in essence blind to what is really going on in the cosmos and interstellar space. What people call aliens, we call IBs, or in layman's terms, interdimensional beings. And what we found out and have known about since the early 70s is that, in simplest terms, other dimensions or planes, as we call them, exist and lay on top of each other, almost stacked, as if you had a blanket with another blanket stacked on top of it and another.
Now, remember, you may have recalled in some of my past broadcasts, I talked about what is known as the nine membrane worlds. The nine membrane worlds.
Their blanket stepped on top of it. To explain it so you can understand, you can imagine the Earth and our reality as a thin blanket. And all of these other higher dimensions are the blankets laying directly on top of ours. However, we can only see our own blanket. Now, the alien beings, or the ships that we have seen in videos, and that many people have captured over the years, are in fact what we call jumpers, in that they exist in their relative dimensions, but have in fact jumped into ours. We have discovered that most of the time we are unable to see them, as they are at a wavelength indifferent to our own, and our senses, eyes, and ears cannot detect.
And that's the key right there, is the wavelength. Certain things that are there, like many people have seen orbs. I've shared my videos of orbs that are seen in the infrared spectrum. You also have ultraviolet as well, which I believe there are natural creatures, natural creatures that have been here just as long as anything else, that are just like animals or plants or insects or whatever, that exist in a spectrum, both visibly and physically, just off phase from ours. Now, things like dicyan and dye allow the visual perception of certain things that may be just off phase and perceivable with different wavelengths, or certain wavelengths of visible light filtered out and other wavelengths added in.
From the information that I have gathered and been briefed on, every planet, star, and galaxy within our own plane and universe, as we see it, exists also in these other dimensions. We've detected, that we know of and that I've been briefed on, at least four other dimensions that do exist. Now, as I said, every planet we know of, every galaxy, does exist in these other dimensions. However, with each new dimension, each planet, galaxy, star takes on a different form. To explain it in the most simplest terms, you can look at our own planet, Jupiter, which is in the outer reaches of our solar system. Now, to us, it's a deadly gaseous planet, completely uninhabitable. However, when you look at Jupiter in an elevated dimension, you will see that it has completely changed in all forms. You will see that it's no longer a deadly ball of gas, but is now solid, has a different color, and is now inhabited. We know for a fact this is true due to the fact that the government has the technology to detect these higher dimensions and actually get a small view of what the solar system looks like on the other side, as we call it, in these other dimensions. There is much we do not know about the universe and how it works. However, here are the facts that I can confirm as truth and were made known to me, and that I and the other people that I worked with have been briefed on. Now, we are not alone in the universe. There are alien beings within our own dimension of space, as well as other dimensions. The planet Earth is an early stage, I guess you could say, training ground, if you will, whereby which we as beings will live until we advanced to the higher dimensions. Now, we are not the bottom of the food chain, and we have discovered that there are at least two dimensions below our own plane. But that is as far as I will go regarding that. Now, I'm getting a little bit low on time, so I will leave you with a few other important things that people will no doubt want to know about later in time once this video is made public. Now, these are things that I have been briefed on by my superiors and that are common knowledge in the Black Ops community. Now, the planet that we know of as Mars was at one time inhabited, but again, at one time, was wiped out by the people who inhabited the planet, which were much more technologically advanced than we are. Which we discovered by testing and analyzing the chemical residue found from the blasts around the planet, as well as artifacts that we've also discovered on the planet, including the infamous glass tubes seen in the few of the publicly made photographs from NASA. Now, these are not glass structures, but a glass-like material that is about 1,000 times stronger than any material or steel that we have on our own planet. These tubes were used as a means of travel underground and above ground by the people who inhabited this planet. It is thought from our research that there are still an ET presence inhabiting Mars. But again, this is as far as I will go, and that I was briefed on regarding that matter. Now, I'm not trying to be completely vague, but I am trying to give you a picture of what is going on out there that doesn't completely put me in more danger than I am already in just by revealing the few things that I have. One of the last things that I will reveal, and that is definitely a fact, and that I have been briefed on, and that many other people involved with the Black Ops community have been briefed on, and that is our own moon, which does in fact have alien bases on it, and also has bases from our own government. Now, there is an ET presence, which is primarily located on the dark side of the moon. The Apollo program was in all actuality a reconnaissance mission so that we could research what was exactly there and who. You will notice that many of the photos from the Apollo missions have airbrushed out buildings and bases, and this is the truth of the matter. About half of the video that you will see that is documented from the Apollo missions was in fact shot here on Earth at Area 51. In fact, if you look at satellite imagery, you can actually see what's left of a crater field created at Area 51 that was used in the filming. Now, the truth is that most of the footage from the moon was simply cluttered with bases, with alien buildings, and from what one astronaut said, and I'm quoting, what were a constant presence of alien vehicles flying over the surface, cluttering up the footage. So again, they showed the American people what they could and recreated the rest here on Earth that they couldn't show. From what we know, the dark side of the moon is where most of the alien presence is located. It's a more primitive alien race from what we can see and our research tells us. It's more primitive than the alien beings you would see on higher dimensions, but still thousands if not millions of years ahead of us. Now we have our own bases, which are primarily located in or near the Sea of Tranquility, which is the site of Apollo 11. And also one base that I know of located near the crater Sabine D. To this day, we're still sending secret missions to and from the moon. However, I do not know the complete details of what we are doing there.
All right, that's the end of that report. Okay, so take that, well, like I said, a grain of, I like pink Himalayan pink salt. And... He talked about, you know, beings not just on the moon in this physical dimension, but also things that exist in the other dimensions, the other realms, across the other membranes. And one of those would be something that was referred to as djinn. He didn't mention it, but I got a hold of a report. I don't know if I'll have time to get into it tonight because I'd like to go a little further in depth with it. But the djinn from a scientific viewpoint. And it is related to being able to perceive djinn via dai sign and dai apparati. Now, what is this dai sign and dai? It's spelled D-I-C-Y-A-N-I-N. David, Ida, Charles, Yellow, Adam, Nora, Ida, Nora. Dai sign. So dai sign and dai. Now, there's some information on it. Why is it illegal, apparently? Some people are saying, no, that's a myth. It's not illegal. But what they're talking about is, I believe, not the exact same. I think certain it's been the true dai sign and dai is not available, at least very, very, very difficult to get. Now, there has been research into the topic of auras, and there is an article that mentions certain goggles that were created. Now, I happen to get a hold of something similar, and I'm experimenting with it, and I'll report back later on if I have any success. It's when I look at plants in the sun, I can actually see something close. And anyway, to what might be a deva, an aura. So these goggles supposedly are said to be able to see into the spirit realm. And they were dyed or created with a chemical called dicyanin, which is illegal and highly restricted to get a hold of. Why is dicyanin dye illegal? Dicyanin dye is illegal because it is said to have special properties, spectral properties, when placed between two planes of glass. So it's not really dangerous. The resulting effect gives anyone the ability to peer into the astral realm or at least see shadows of the astral along with seeing auras of people and energy. You can essentially see into another plane of existence, another plane of reality. Some people think that it can be used to determine a psychopathic personality of someone, or someone that doesn't have an aura, someone that's not human. You know, look at you. How come you look different through the glasses? Many wonder why dicyanin is highly restricted. Since it's not a drug, it isn't physically dangerous. It's not poisonous. However, a skilled chemist with keen ability is able to synthesize the chemical with basic lab equipment. So the history of dicyanin dye. During the 1920s, a scientist by the name of Walter Kilner experimented with a chemical called dicyanin. He placed the dye in between two glass planes and looked through it. What he found was the ability to see the aura of people. Because of the dye's ability to block out the white light spectrum, it helped Kilner's ability to concentrate on a person's aura. Before the 1940s, private researchers were able to freely use dicyanin dye. During the same time frame, the U.S. government banned any use of the dye. Everything happened in the 40s, huh? And the alien thing, you know. In 2010, very briefly, the public was able to buy dicyanin dye, but it was quickly banned again. When a government chemist was asked to see just how classified the dye was, the chemist found out the company that creates the dye assigns a special code to its customers. This chemist also found out that his security code allows him to buy all the LSD, all the heroin or cocaine he wants, but he did not have a high enough clearance to request dicyanin dye. There's a book by George Andrews, and it's called Extraterrestrial Friends and Foes. George C. Andrews, a researcher, quotes a statement made by the director of a leading edge researcher named Vladimir Valerian. Quote, a friend of mine and four of his friends experimented with crystalline structures a year or two ago, back in the mid-1980s, and they figured out how to cut them along certain planes so they could actually see the aura or energy field around people. That's when they discovered that all people aren't people, or the people they thought they were. It appears that some ET humanoids have dark blue ovid auras. Aura cameras developed by Chuck Schramek, yes, the same Chuck Schramek of Hale Bopp companion controversy, and others clearly show the seven multicolored chakra points of the human soul-spirit matrix. Presumably, since reptilians do not have the same type, or maybe possibly no soul, they would not have the same multicolored auric field. So it happens that all people they checked met this criteria, also wore dark glasses, and made every attempt to act like they really wanted nothing to do with people in general. That's some information. I have some more here somewhere. Here we go. Now, allowing you to see or block out certain wavelengths of light. Let me just go further here. So they live, quote unquote, auric glasses was created by this guy, Tom. Now here's Tom has disappeared and has become. Now you can get them. You can get them if you have money. And I think the $8,000, and you can have yourself a pair. And email me if you want to know how to get them. Dicyanin, these are the real ones. Prana View. These were created by a guy named Tom who used the dye, and then he disappeared. Quote, Tom has disappeared and has become uncontactable. The website has gone, and the goggles are now impossible to get. No one else on the planet makes them as far as I know. So this guy, Matthew, a few years ago, the inventor sent him a pair of the up-to-date prototypes for him to evaluate. They're like I said, they're floating around out there. There's a pair for $8,000. So the idea was they were going to mass produce them and basically sell these things. Now, here's an expert. Let's see. Auric lenses can help detect psychopaths. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. There were these Russians that did this crystal experiment. Like, they were talking about the crystal something, and they made a pair of glasses that was also able to see things that were not there. Now, it did have a different color. They used sort of a reddish. It was more of like a red-orange filter that everything looked kind of red-orange. Through the glasses that I have and these glasses, they're more everything looks blue, like violet. Everything looks purple. But the Russians with crystals have something. Everything looks sort of orange, but you can see things that aren't there. And they had a few videos. Of course, they were taken down. The videos were – I think I recorded them somewhere. I got them on the other computer somewhere. Anyway, so they were talking about cutting these crystals along certain planes so they could see the aura. But yeah, things – anyway. So let's see. They followed one of these people out into the desert where he eventually had a trailer. After waiting until dusk, they made a pretense of needing help, and knocked on the door. This is somebody that they saw that didn't have the same aura. So these people were using this crystal thing to look at people's auras, and they're like, this person doesn't have the same aura as everybody. Let's follow them. So they go and they follow them out of the desert. And then they go to the trailer and they knock on the door like, we need help. After a short while, the light went on and the man came to the door. He looked normal, except that his pupils were vertical slits instead of circles. They said it works. The only trouble that it costs at around $2,000 to put a pair of these glasses together. So Walter Kilnan, he used it, and he said he was able to see the aura because it blocks out a certain wavelength. The Dysynin, let's see, private researchers used Dysynin dye before the government locked it away in the 1940s. This gives an approximation of the time when the decisions were being made to censor all available knowledge. Yeah, the Tesla stuff, right? So that the new generations, that's us, could be programmed into a belief system that was manufactured by the government. What did I just rant about in the first hour? So Dr. Walter Kilner, oh, by the way, yeah, manufactured by the government, which had no relation, of course, to true reality. And now a lot of us are like, you know, a lot of people find this stuff that I'm saying right now hard. But come on, glasses that can allow you to see things that aren't there. You're smoking too much weed, man. Yeah, okay, well, you're watching too much freaking TV. How about that? And you're eating too much high fructose corn syrup or something there. I don't know. What's the deal with Dysynin to Dr. Kilner? Dr. Walter Kilner was a distinguished British physician in the late 19th and early 20th centuries who became one of the first radiologists in practice. He was one of the very first people to, you know, radiology. In 1911, he published the Human Atmosphere. Thank you, Shermanator. Now, in 1911, I got to get the book, The Human Atmosphere, a book about his experiences and observations using a certain coal tar dye, which is Dysynin, coal tar dye, to enhance the ability to see the human aura. The book was reissued in 1921, shortly after his death, as The Human Aura, and remains today one of the best collections of detailed, candid observations of the aura available in the West. Okay, Walter Kilner. Seeing the aura and techniques on how to enhance that ability are near to my own heart, as I can see the auric field around people and magical objects to a certain degree. It is clear to anyone who is an experienced witch, magician, or occultist that being able to sense what we call the aura is a vital ability. Whether those sensations are interpreted by the brain and mind as visual or otherwise, this ability allows one to deal with the inner forces directly, with no intermediaries or reflectors, such as tarot cards, rune sticks, etc. Beyond that audience, if it were possible to offer definite, physical, reproducible proof of the existence of the human aura, there would be a revolution in scientific thinking about our own nature, the nature of the universe, and our place within it. Not only that, as if that weren't enough, there would be vast areas of research and understanding open to us that are now closed. invented by Tom Beauchamp Arnold and designed to emulate the essential characteristics of the famous Klein screen Aura goggles made by Harry Boddington. In particular, that consists of a sharp, symmetric blue transition centered around 400 nanometers and a step from red transition very near to 700 nanometers. So they have to be created in a special way where you're stepping through a transition of wavelength and color. The new PronaView 2 Aura goggles were the first goggles since Walter Kilner's Kilner Screen, or Kilner Science, that actually worked. The goggles work by sensitizing the eyes, so you have to use them for a while to train your eyes to start seeing. They work by, so there's an instruction. I mean, actually, I got these instructions. Well, it takes like a week. They work by sensitizing the eyes to the visible spectrum IR and UV, or infrared and ultraviolet. The eyes then become partially dark adapted as well. When you look through the goggles, your very sharp transition between green and red. All green plants are seen as bright red, and the rest of the environment or viewing area is purple. Approximately 50% infrared and 50% ultraviolet. The goggles are made of a series of filters that only pass through a very narrow frequency of light. The rods and cones then become trained and adapted to see the aura. The goggles are also the first in that they come with an aura assessment scale in which you can gauge where your auric sight is, 0 being none to 26 being full color with layers, texture, and distance. So no other aura goggle does what it claims. The scale is a direct development of using the goggle. Finally, the world of the unseen can be opened up to everyone without years of energy practice. This is a piece of technology that can help people literally see, you know, further into the realm in which they exist. You know, there was some talk about the military doing some experiments where they created an eye drop that you could put in your eye, that the soldiers could put in their eyes, and it would give you like night vision and a widened spectrum for a while. You'd be able to see further into, stuff. You could go out without night vision goggles. Also, there's different types of night vision goggles. Not all of them are just for seeing in total darkness. And there's a reason why they switched to green. Some of the older night vision goggles that the military, maybe some of you guys from Vietnam, maybe you can verify this. I think that they were more closer to the red spectrum. Orange and red spectrum, and they were getting, the reason they changed them is because they were getting reports from soldiers that were using this, especially being things that weren't there. They were seeing things that weren't there, because these things not only allowed them to see, you know, enhanced regular wavelength of light at night, you know, or very little light, but they pulled in other wavelengths of light and gave you the ability to see them. And this was distracting the soldiers. What the hell is all this shit flying around? So this individual, Matthew, has taught himself to see energy fields with his own eyes using these goggles. They were invented by Tom Beauchamp Arnold. Let's see, I said that already. They're the first of their kind. Back in 2009, in May, they were able to create a classic old-style liquid lens aura goggle using spectrophotometry cells as viewing screens. And then they have some details of the construction as well. They have a workshop, or had a workshop, where they were testing the goggles, and they were working pretty well. They were truly a nuisance to deal with, and tended to leak blue fluid. They are also quite costly. The spectrophotometry cells were about $280 each, and they also consume a large amount of costly dye. 3 out of 4 people felt that they were the best that they tried. Okay. Then there is another one that they made, the epoxy lens aura goggles. I think these were the best of some of the best ones. They were a little bit cheaper to create. Let's see, but unfortunately, the dyed epoxy is sensitive to light. If exposed too much to direct sunlight, they will start showing visible signs of damage and wear. If merely even to room light, they can degrade after about 90 days. So they were working on trying to overcome. So there's a lot of little things that, you know, you don't take into account. I mean, when creating goggles, it can look into the ether. In fall of 2009, we revisited the glass transmission data from various makers such as Kopp Corning and Hoya. This, combined with the work of analyzing Pina cyanol and antique aura goggles over the summer, have changed all this data from a jumble of obscure graphs into an alphabet of, it's possible to spell, many desired spectrums. After a brief but intense spell of creative trance, I found some candidate combination glasses that I evaluated. At this time, I have a three-piece glass and plastic aura filter that appears to have good performance. PranaView Aura are designed to emulate the essential characteristics of the kill-in-the-screen aura goggles made by Harry Boddington, in particular that consists of a sharp, symmetric blue transition centered around 400 nanometers. This is key. And a step-form red transition very near to 700 nanometers. That is key. That allows you to see. What PranaView does is sensitize the eyes and the visual system of the brain so that the human aura is easier to see. And many people already possess the ability to see the aura to some degree and only require sensitization and training to kind of reactivate and improve the ability that's always been there. You know, they say everybody's probably familiar with the, they say babies, quote unquote, babies can see auras. Well, yeah, you can, when you're born and you're like, and then you're kind of train yourself to kind of block it out. You know, we don't need to see that. Well, this kind of brings it back. Let's see if there's any other information here. Actually, I do have, I'm not going to have enough time, but there is. If you, I did post this earlier in our thing from ACS Publications, synthesis of photosensitizing dyes, dicyanine. Now, they spell it with an E at the end of it, but it is the same stuff. There is basically this, they've digitized the article or the from the 1920s, synthesis of photosensitizing dyes, dicyanine. The photo, and then it talks about, now I'm not a chemist, so I mean, I look at this and I couldn't tell you how easy you're, and this is an abstract, it's the article's first page, so it's not even the full thing, obviously, huh? But, hey, you know, I would encourage you, if you can find some of this stuff, to give it a try and see what you can, see what you can see. See, they can't hide some of the stuff, like the orbs. People are seeing orbs with cameras. I mean, with night vision cameras, because obviously they're enhancing the spectrum, right? They're adding a few nanometers or something there, tweaking around with it. So they set off the motion. That's how I discovered my orbs and other light snakes and dots of light that move around and pulsate and blink and do all kinds of strange things. They're not aggressive. They're just interesting. But you can only see them. Like when it's really quiet in the wee hours in the morning is when they come. And they set off the motion sensor of the night vision camera. I believe these things have always been there. I don't think they're like, some people, oh, maybe they're like, you know, spirits of, no. I think they're just, you know, it's just like squirrels and stuff outside. I mean, these things are just floating around. And sometimes, though, you know, maybe there are other anomalies, you know, people have ghosts and stuff, right? But this has also caught the attention of the ghost hunting community, quote unquote, as a possible tool, you know, in their arsenal of tools to try to detect things. Who knows? Maybe, you know, we need to explore this further. And yeah, it does seem that around the 1940s, don't you think? Folks, that around the 1940s, there was That's when the cover-ups of everything really started, right? That's when they're beforehand, people could invent things and tweak with things and do stuff. There were more electric cars than there were gasoline cars in the early 20th century, right? There were more electric cars, and there were more electric charging stations than there were gas. Yep, and everything started to go to crap. All right, so I'm almost out of time. So yeah, that is. I will continue to study this. In 1908 to 1910, Kilner looked at human subjects through a glass cell containing the dicyanin, and he saw a gray-blue haze. He trained his eye to see the aura without the screen. The best viewing conditions are dim light and a dark background. He said that 95% of persons can see the aura. You don't need to be a psychic or an occultist. He looked at auras through different colored screens and concluded he could diagnose disease. He believed that the aura was ultraviolet radiation from the body, even through his UV photography failed to show it, even though his UV photography failed to show that. But note that older Kilner goggles are believed are little use as the dye fades with age. Tests on dicyanin screens, however, show that they almost fully cut out the light in the middle of the visible spectrum, letting through only the double image of red and blue ends of the spectrum. This explains at least some aspects of Kilner's aura. Another flaw is that none of Kilner's research was carried out double blind. That is, his beliefs influences his conclusions. Okay. In the early 1900s, there was much talk of the newly discovered rays, X-rays, radio waves, radioactivity, N-rays, odic forces. Oh, I forgot to talk about the odic forces. We'll have to do that on another show. Philosophy and spiritualism were popular. I mean, people, ectoplasm experiments, I've done those. Use red light, and you know it's very dangerous to you and the subject. You have to have a willing subject. You have to have, I mean, it's all kinds of crazy stuff. And now it's not the same as possession or anything, but ectoplasm manifestation is interesting. Kilner also claimed, we did that in Germany, that by similar means, you know, to see magnetic, electric, radioactivity field, you could see magnetic waves with the right equipment. So there's just like the heat stuff, you know. So. These are pieces of technology and information that they're holding from us. They're holding them from us. I'm telling you, we are allowing these people to just simplify our lives and say, let us present to you our answer for everything. Let us give you our tracking devices and our money and our science and our medicine and our education. Bullshit. We're going to make our own. Let us just do our own thing. Leave us alone. And they're not going to do it. And what are we going to do in response? That is a discussion for another time, my friends. Ladies and gentlemen and non-binary, stay tuned for the great Jay Parker coming up next here on Studio B. And we also have David Dubine on Studio A. I'm wishing you all a very happy and well weekend. May all be well with you and yours. I'm out of time, so I'm out of here. Ciao, ciao.
listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what...